Good morning, Mkaya.
How are you?
How are you, my Mkaya?
I'm very well, thank you, Chairperson, because I also have a very good news to announce that in my constituency, Sisulu, I managed to win one ward from the ANC, which is now the second one in this municipality that we win from the ANC. Aliwal North, Jamestown, Chairperson.
No, we must congratulate you. Clearly,
you are. I'm also congratulating the others that managed to win wards, but I just thought, you know, this is my work that I've been doing in my constituency while we are running also this portfolio of Chairperson.
Good morning,
Chair.
Who are you congratulating?
Good morning,
Chair. Honorable members, must be applauded for all the work that you are doing, regardless of which colors you wear. As a member of parliament, we want to ensure that you are hard at work, and you are doing the necessary work to ensure that the services are, our people are able to access services that are needed by many communities throughout our country. So I would like to applaud all those that have done well in the by-elections, and also congratulate those that have grown into other areas and want to ensure that you all continue serving our people throughout the landscape of the Republic. Honorable members, let me welcome you to our meeting on the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform, and Rural Development. Welcome all the honorable members, as well as officials of the department who have joined us, and welcome the Auditor General, who has joined us as well, members of the media, and our distinguished guests. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. We meet on a sad occasion where we have come to learn of the sad passing of the outgoing Auditor General, Ubawu Thembekile Khimi Makwethu, who have succumbed to lung cancer. And we as a Portfolio Committee of Agriculture, Land Reform, and Rural Development have had an opportunity to be rendered service with distinction from the former AG, who has been able to serve at this position from the 1st of December 2013 to his passing. We want to convey our condolences to his family, friends, and colleagues who over the years have been supporting him through the work that he championed, and wish to thank his family profusely for supporting him throughout his entire career whilst he was serving the nation. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, let us bow our heads and take a moment of silence in his honor. May his soul rest in peace. Honorable members, let us check with Mamu Kakaza. Do we have any apologies?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Good morning, members, colleagues, and the department. Chair, we've got apology from the minister. He's attending the joint ministerial committee meeting, and Mamu Priet is attending to party commitment. Thank you, Chair. Those are the two apologies.
Thank you. Manyamza, any apologies?
Thank you, Chair. I've got an apology from DM Squatcha. He's attending ministerial duties in Eastern Cape, trying to resolve issues of land claims. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable members, any further apologies?
Morning, Chair. Morning, Chair.
Good morning.
I have requested to be released at 10 for my doctor's appointment.
Noted, Honorable Mbata. Any further apologies?
Morning, Chair.
Morning.
Let me also tender an apology for Honorable Mahlatsi. She had a program on young parliamentarians and they've been called to an urgent meeting in Joburg. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable members, we have quite an intense program today. Of the Auditor General of South Africa is briefing on the 2019-2020 annual reports of the former Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and its entities in preparation for the BRRR. We will therefore be inviting the Auditor General to do both these presentations. We will also, after we have dispensed of the program or presentation rather of the Auditor General, have a briefing from the Agricultural Research Council, ARC, as well as on desk report Biological Products, OBP, on their 2019-2020 annual reports in preparation also for the BRRR. Allow me therefore, honorable members, to invite the Auditor General to put both their presentations to the committee. I thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members and the colleagues from the department at large. Indeed, Chairperson, we are coming this morning in front of the committee with heavy hearts, but we are understanding that we still need to continue with some of the responsibilities bestowed upon us. We are bringing the presentation, Chairperson, which is primarily segmented in two sections. The first part will deal with the audit outcome of the former Department of Agriculture and its entities. But the second part, it is the contents of the special report on COVID that the AG tabled on the 2nd of September. We never had an opportunity to engage the committee on it, but we wanted to take advantage of this platform to just share with you some of the highlights that came out when we were doing the proactive work in the intervention that the Department of that layer had enrolled to support the farmers on COVID. Chairperson, if you could allow me, I am accompanied by a team. I have Deputy Business Executive, Michelle Mageman. I am also supported by Mr. Desmond Pongola, the Senior Manager responsible for the Department of Agriculture. I also have Ms. Delta Rapiti, who is the senior manager specifically overseeing ARC. I wanted to ask Mr. Pongola to take us through the presentation on the audit outcome. It will be followed by Ms. Michelle Mageman, who would then give us an overview of our observations of how COVID-19 intervention is concerned. We will then take the comments from their chairperson. Just as a, for the interest of the committee, we are working on the second report, the second special report of the AGSA on COVID-19 interventions across all government sectors. We are intending to table that report by end of November, and we are hoping that we'll have an opportunity again to come to the committee and brief you in particular with regard to the observations that we've made on the farmers' support for COVID-19. Thank you so much. Desmond, if you could take over. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, the PE. Please allow me to share the presentation. I'm uploading it. Can everyone see the presentation?
Not yet, Desmond.
It has not been uploaded.
Or can we see it?
Yes, we can see it. You may proceed.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I'll be taking you through the audit outcomes for the Old Duff Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Chair, I will start with our reputation promise as the Auditor General of South Africa. We have a constitutional mandate. The Supreme Audit Institution of South Africa, we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, governance in the public sector through auditing by building public confidence. Chair, as you've highlighted, Chair, in terms of the role of this meeting, that our role actually as the Auditor General is to reflect on the audit work performed to assist the Portfolio Committee in its oversight role in assessing the performance of the entities in consideration with the objective of the BRRR. Chair, the outcomes are for 2019-20. This is at high level in terms of us as the Auditor General. We audit the financial statements to ensure fair presentation of the financial statements, and we also audit the reliability of the performance information against the predetermined objectives, and we also audit the compliance with key laws and regulations. So these are the main three areas that we examine as the office. Chair, after we've audited those three areas, as I've mentioned, we express the following audit outcomes, the unqualified opinion with no findings. This opinion, Chair, it's when there is no findings that we found relating to those three areas where the financial statements are not misstated, where there are no findings on the area of the performance information, or where we couldn't find any findings on the key laws and regulation. This is what we called a clean audit, where you would have a color that is yellowish. It's when we audited the financial statements where there are no findings on the on the three areas that we audit, and the purple is when there was the misstatements that we found and the financial statements are qualified. Chair, you'll see on the presentation we have on certain areas of the presentation we express a percentage, but it's mainly based on the five audits that we audited. This is an accountability wheelchair in terms of planning and what the entity needs to do in terms of planning by developing an APP and the implementation of the APP and ensuring that the controls are in place and ensuring that there's proper monitoring and oversight that must be in place, that must be performed by key assurance providers, and there must be also consequence management. It mainly explains the accountability of the entity. These are the entities that we've audited. It's the old Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, ARC, OBP, NAMC, and PPCEB. Chair, what we have here, Chair, is mainly the audit outcomes for the 5-year period. If, Chair, you look at the audit outcomes for the period, there has been a regression within the portfolio if you compare it from 2016 up to 2021. But if you compare the 2019 and 2020 and 1920, the two financial year, there has not been any improvement. There has been a stagnation in terms of the audit outcomes. PPC team, they received an unqualified with no findings. NAMC, they received an unqualified with findings on the financial statements because there were material adjustments that we noted when we audited. And OPP, there were also material adjustments that we noted when we audited, and there were a number of findings relating to SCM, and there was also irregular expenditure. Actually, both entities, it was a result of those compliance areas. The Department of Agriculture was qualified on the area of the biological assets. This is mainly on the forest a branch which has transferred to the other Department of Environmental Affairs. ARC was also qualified this year again. Some of the qualification areas, there were repeat qualification areas, which is your property, plant and equipment, and commitments, revenue from rendering of services. We've listed here, Chair, in terms of the repeat qualification, it's mainly the two, the property, plant and equipment and revenue services for ARC. In terms of the credibility of the performance reporting, PPC, BARC, and OPP, they did not have any issues relating to the audit of performance information. However, within the portfolio, DEF had issues on the reliability of the performance report in terms of the achievements of certain indicators. And NAMC, they had issues in terms of usefulness. Some of the indicators were not well defined. There was no clear logic in terms of the indicator and the target planned. Chair, this is a summary of some of the findings that were noted relating to the compliance areas. As I've mentioned when I was explaining the different types of audit outcomes, these are the non-compliance areas that we noted, where we are saying that the financial statements that were submitted for audit, we noted that there were material adjustments to the financial statements, which resulted to having a compliance paragraph reported on the audit report, and and there were also issues that we noted relating to procurement and contracts in terms of the Department of Agriculture and NAMC, and there were also issues relating to non-prevention of fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the Department of Agriculture, OPP and NAMC. And we also reported areas of consequence management relating to the three entities as projected. Chair, this is the status of the internal controls within the portfolio as a whole, where the portfolio is struggling. It's mainly on the area of leadership, where there isn't effective leadership in terms of oversight regarding the financial reporting and performance information, which then resulted to the status of the audit outcomes. And there were also concerns in terms of the action plans that were developed by the entities that didn't adequately address the previous findings raised. As a result, there were repeat findings that we noted during the audit, which translated to the current audit outcomes. There were also issues relating to inadequate record keeping, which then resulted to the entities not having a complete and accurate information available and accessible for audit, which resulted to the negative audit outcomes. There were issues that we noted relating to controls over the daily and monthly processing of transactions that did not prevent and detect deficiencies in some of the instances. Chair, this slide it's mainly the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. If you look at it, Chair, there has been an increase from the previous financial year. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure amounted to 46 million for the portfolio as a whole. The biggest contributors are within the Department of Agriculture, OPP, as well as NAMC. And Chair, there was fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was reported in the previous financial year, where we had to follow up and assess whether these were investigated. If you look at the graph at the bottom right, you will see that there has been a regression where certain fruitless and wasteful expenditure was not investigated. We also noted that there is an increase over the past 2 years relating to the expenditure that we noted. DEF is also one of the contributors in the irregular expenditure, as well as NAMC, that incurred the most of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In terms of the previous irregular expenditure that we identified in the previous financial year, we noted that within the department it was not investigated. That's why you'll see it as red on the bottom right.
Can you be of time? Minutes remaining on both presentations. Let's be mindful of time.
Yes. Chair, these are some of the findings that we noted on SCM, relating to the entities not obtaining quotations, not inviting competitive bidding, and not obtaining a tax clearance certificate. Chair, this is the snapshot of the portfolio. It's one entity was unqualified, as I've explained on the previous slide. I won't dwell much on this slide, Chair. Chair, we have what we call preventative controls, that if an entity implements these preventative controls, it will not result into material irregularities relating to financial loss or costly investigation and disciplinary process or litigations. However, we've also highlighted on the following slides some of the principles required for implementing proper preventative controls. I'll leave it to the committee just to go through some of these areas that will enhance the preventative controls. Chair, these are some of the key root causes that we would like to communicate to the portfolio committee, that there is slow response in improving the key controls and that there is lack of accountability, instability in key positions. And Chair, these are the recommendations that we would like to share with the committee. These recommendations are mainly to the entities where we are saying that there should be a required agency by management in responding to the findings that we identified during the audit, and also to address key vacancies timely. And also that in relation to the merge of the two departments, the executive and the accounting authority should ensure that there's a proper risk assessment performed and action plan to address risk identified relating to the merger. And we also want to highlight to the portfolio committee that these are the key recommendations that we want the portfolio committee to focus on. Chair, that would be all in terms of the audit outcomes, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Michelle, I wanted to take you through the COVID, the special report, if that's all in order.
Please proceed, Michelle.
Thank you so much. Chair, I am mindful of time, so I'll do the highlights on each of the slides. We wanted to present to you the special report, the findings that we had identified in special report one that was already tabled. And the purpose of Special Report 1 and Special Report 2, Chair, that we are currently busy with the Special Report 2, is to provide the department with some early warning signals in terms of any control weaknesses that we identify, just so that they also have time to close those control weaknesses, so that when they are implementing this initiative, they are aware or they are implementing the controls that should be there, so to achieve the purpose of this. Of this initiative. So if you go to the background on slide, the next slide, Dev, after this one, the purpose that we, the background of the initiative was to provide farmers with some relief. There was vouchers about, the department had budgeted 680 million for voucher support, and then 20 million that was also given to some farmers for some hygiene products during the COVID-19 pandemic. The initiative was aimed at certain commodities, which was poultry, vegetables, fruits, other livestock, and winter field crops. So in the focus of the audit, Chair, on the next slide, we looked at mainly on the voucher system. We looked at the application process to determine the farmers that the potential beneficiaries, the farmers that are given the relief. So the application, how they applied for it and how they were approved, the distribution, redemption, and settlement of the vouchers, the procurement and contract, the procurement and contract management processes for appointing the service providers for the redemption of the vouchers. So which means the suppliers that the farmers will be using. And then also we looked at the procurement and contract management process of appointing the service providers for the hygiene product. I'm going to skip this slide and just go straight into the findings themselves. So in terms of the supplier selection process, we had identified that during the time that the suppliers where the vouchers will be redeemed at, the suppliers, when they were put on the department database, the department did not necessarily do the verification checks. If you're a supplier, you come and you bring in your interest, you are then included in the on the listing. However, we say that you needed to the department must check the tax compliance status of the supplier. They must check whether there was conflict of interest. They must also check that the supplier will be how much will they be charging the farmers when they come. So we're saying that supplier selection process needed to verify those suppliers to make sure that you are dealing with valid suppliers that are a good standing with the receiver of revenue and there's no conflict of interest. So that was also communicated to the department who then had stated that they will do follow-up investigations and try and close those gaps. So for SR2, we'll also be following up on whether these processes were done. We are currently actually following up on whether these processes are done. The next one we identified is invalid and duplicate applicants. So we identified that some of the beneficiaries or farmers that were approved on as applicants, we looked at their ID numbers and we identified that we identified about 673 that were invalid ID numbers. That should not have been included in the list. The department did state that to mitigate this, they will look at the controls and look at whether and do some ID documents and also scan it through a Survey 123 system. And where there's invalid IDs, then they will scrap those IDs. So this will also be followed up and currently is being followed up in the SR2, Special Report 2 progress that we are currently busy with. We also identified that there's applicants that do not meet the criteria. So we identified about 861 applicants that did not meet the minimum criteria. So there was a criteria that was set that was required. For a farmer to be able to get the voucher. There were some suppliers that did not meet that minimum criteria, some of them who met the criteria but were rejected. So that was raised to the department that they must relook at the criteria, and those that were rejected, they must obviously see if it was a valid rejection or not. The department also had included their own planned actions there that they will look further into those, even though you'll see that they are stating that during the level 2 some of the information was not received, so they will relook at that application process. We also looked at how they're distributing, whether there are controls in terms of do they know who got the vouchers, and also appreciating that the vouchers are distributed at the provinces and there is a manual system that is being utilized. So we're looking at whether there are sufficient controls to make sure that this manual process is effective and there are adequate, that the listings that are being provided are complete and accurate. We did identify that the listings were not necessarily adequate. They were not tying up. Reconciliations were not done to distributed vouchers and redeemed vouchers. And therefore, we were saying that without those reconciliations being done, you will not be able to detect some of the fraudulent transactions. You will also not be able to determine how many vouchers are distributed at a point in time. The department did commit to ensuring that reconciliations are done, and they will strengthen up those controls and the tracking of the vouchers. We also identified that vouchers that are paid to the suppliers, so when a farmer goes in and redeems the vouchers, that is not necessarily marked paid. And as you know, there will be a time lag between the farmer and what gets paid at head office. So we say during that time lag, you might find that a farmer could go and produce the same voucher at another supplier. So there must be a process where that voucher is scrapped, or a process on the voucher is either stamped by the supplier or somewhere in head office. The department then also had a commitment that they will then they will improve the controls, and they will then inform the suppliers where the voucher has already been redeemed and cancelled. So those are the findings that we had identified in that process. We did give on the next slide some recommendations to the department to say these are the overall, from our observations, these are the recommendations that we are giving you. I've already discussed with some of them. I will just look at the blue part at the end where we say that the department should also perform some physical site verifications or some telephonic validations with the farmers to confirm that the vouchers were redeemed in full. And also they must, if you look at the middle part, we're saying that they must look at the prices that are being charged for reasonability by the suppliers. They must look at the tax compliance status of the suppliers. And also re-look at the and cancel any vouchers that were incorrectly redeemed by maybe invalid applicants. In our overall conclusion, we do recommend the preventative controls that must be implemented. We are aware of the manual farmer, the manual system that is being used that could be that is possible to high risk of error. Therefore, the department must intensify their control environment in order to drive the initiative forward. We also did suggest to the department then looking at the seasonal changes now, and that the pandemic is ongoing. So looking at, because the focus was on, in some instances, on winter crops, whether looking at the seasonal change that is happening now and what will happen now going forward. Just to close that, Chair, is that we are busy with the special report. So we are following up on the findings that we've raised, and we will then, in the special report two, we will then include to say from the special report one, what has been done, has there been any improvement? And then we will report that in special report two. And we will also be looking at testing some of the actual redemption vouchers that that have happened, and whether the money is being utilized, or the vouchers are being utilized for what they were intended to be utilized for. So that was special report one, Chair, from my side. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Michelle. And me also thank the AG for their presentation. Honorable members, you have the presentation on the audit outcomes from the Auditor General on the former Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, as well as their COVID-19 report. Honorable members, we will then engage with the two presentations and pose questions of clarity or comments you may have. We'll begin with Honorable Kappe.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'm a person with this video, and I think it's so faint, my network is not good. Chair, let me appreciate the presentation from the AG. It is very much helping for the portfolio committee to understand the performance of the department, the SOL department, and its entities. Chair, I wouldn't dwell much into the second presentation related to COVID, because the department came before us, and I have noted the recommendations and the findings that this is what has been discussed, and we agreed with the department on how they are trying to tackle the concerns raised by the Auditor General up to those things of suppliers' interest And I remember, Chair, we even now recently spoke about them implementing an IT system so that they no longer use this manual type of dealing with applications. Chair, the ARC has got repeat qualifications. I want also to ask the Auditor General on this regard, not even the ARC. How does the AG's office assist entities and departments with such repeat qualifications? I know there's audit action plan. I know there's management letters or management meetings that are being held, but if it becomes a repeat, is the Auditor General helpless in this regard? Or what is it that needs to be done? OBP has been indicated that they had been an issue of inventory ordered and paid, but not received. Is this legal? Is it legit? Is it possible or is it okay that entities can do this or any department can do this? What is the position of the Auditor General here? So that we know in future, they know in future that you only pay when you have received, or is it okay that they can order and pay upfront? Across the board, there's non-compliance with supply chain management processes. This is an old song. Out of the experience of the AG, what really needs to be done? Workshops have been held, supply chain managers are being appointed, but out of their experience from ever since the dawn of democracy, what is it that we can do differently as people who are doing oversight to try and improve on this issue of non-compliance with supply chain management? My last question, Chair. What is the role of the AG in improving audit outcomes, except those preventative measures and the action plan? Is the AG able to move along with the department, with the entities throughout, or do they only come to audit? I'm asking this, Chair, because I know it's a huge sum of money that is paid to the Auditor General. Besides them putting up a action plan that they agree to when the department has put it up there, what is their role? Is there a point where we will see Auditor General working along with these departments up to the time when they come to say, now we are starting our audit? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Klappe. Honorable Klappe. Mthembu Omkhulu. Bawuchapha. Honorable Stein.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, and thank you to the Office of the Auditor General to come and do the presentation to us. Chairperson, I want to start with the last question, or one of the questions that my Honourable colleague Klappe has asked to the Office of the AG, and it's something that I've raised before in the previous term with dealing with this department when it was still agriculture, forestry and fisheries. And as far as I'm concerned, Chair, there is something that's called a management report that goes from the Office of the Auditor General to the management of these departments.
that gives them exactly the problems. And I'm reading on slide 30 in this report by the AG that it says under the first bullet point, recommendations to the department and its entities. There should be the required urgency by management in responding to our messages about addressing risk identified and improving internal controls. Now, those messages and those reports are being sent from this office to the department. And as far as I can read in this report, that is what is not responded to by the department. So, Chairperson, I would like us as portfolio committee to think about the recommendation that we be sent those same messages or reports from the Department of the Auditor General because of this portfolio to keep this department responsible. We cannot leave it in the hands of the Auditor General. The Auditor General gives us the reports, then it's up to us to do something. So, Chairperson, that would be something that I think this portfolio must strongly think about and look at the possibility of such a recommendation so that we can be also assisting, or not also, it is our role. It is our responsibility to keep the department responsible for its performance. So I just want to start with that. Then, Chairperson, I want to say that I'm very, very happy to hear that this office will have a follow-up process on the recommendations that the Auditor General's Department has done regarding the, what, as far as I'm concerned, shocking findings with the COVID spending, Chairperson. I've had my concerns from the beginning. We said from the beginning there are too many loose points that could open this whole process up for corruption. I keep on saying that I'm getting calls from farmers that said they never qualified, although they had all the correct criteria. So I'm still concerned, Chairperson, at who sat down and all the 50,000 applications worked through it in a very short period, and then came up with people that then apparently qualified, but now when we listen to the report by the Auditor General, when they did some spot checks, they found these people without the valid IDs, without valid criteria. They even found another few people that qualified but did not get the funding. So I think, Chairperson, from the beginning that was a red bells were ringing that it could be open for corruption, Chairperson, and I do believe that we also would need the second report from the Auditor General's office for us to help with that. Again, Chairperson, I am asking again, we asked from the beginning that we get a full list of all the farmers with their contact details, with amounts that they were given for these vouchers and where they were supposed to be spending the vouchers, for our role as oversight is this portfolio committee. It's not the role of the Auditor General to do the oversight role. They have their own work, but we must also play our role. The last one on that, I just wanted to ask whether also such an investigation was done into the PPE contracts for the department's offices. I'm not talking about the masks and the sanitizing and whatever that was bought for farmers as part of that, but the amounts that were spent to sanitize and clean and mask and whatever, all offices and the departmental premises, because some of those amounts raised to me the concerns that it was too high. It was areas that at that stage was not even open, but massive amounts were spent on those specific premises. Chairperson, and then my last question would be, I am aware that there was a court case against the previous financial manager under the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Was anything done? Is there any investigation into that? And was anyone charged? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Stein. Honorable Matthias. Honorable Ntate Matthias.
Honorable Chair, thank you so much for the opportunity to make a contribution in the presentation of the Office of the Auditor General. Look, Honorable Chair, I know that you not agree with what I'm saying, but I have to say it nonetheless, that we should be, rather, the ANC should be in Bloemfontein picketing in support of its Secretary General than to waste time in this hearing. Because the ANC and this team that sits in this committee is just as corrupt as the Secretary General. It is just as corrupt as the Secretary General of the ANC. Now we are having these discussions about corruption in the department. When you and I know that there will be no consequences. There will be no consequences.
Order,
can you
Chair.
Mute Honorable
you are wasting
Matthias.
Your time.
Honorable Chair, on a point of order.
You are wasting
can
your
we,
time with this discussion.
Honorable Matthias.
When
order,
you know
Chair.
That there will be no consequences.
Chair, order, we can listen to
Honorable
Matthias.
Why waste time
Honorable
about
Matthias,
this?
Please.
You will never listen to Honorable Matthias.
Honorable Matthias,
doing what you are
order.
Good at. When you should
order,
be doing what you are good at, and that is by showing your corruption,
order.
By defending
you,
Honorable
Matthias off the platform. Honorable members, let me remind you that we are dealing with the Auditor General's report. And as honorable members of this portfolio committee, it is our duty to ensure that we engage and interact with the presentations that the Auditor General has put before us. And therefore, I would like to request honorable members to desist from other engagements other than what has been put before us. We'll proceed. Honorable Mbabama. Kangeba.
Chairperson, I know that she also had an appointment, but I just want to see if she's still on. She might
Yeah, I'm just checking if she's still on.
I think she's left too.
All right. She was driving to King Williamstown as input earlier.
She's left.
Yes. Honorable Briet.
She was mentioned as an apology chair.
Okay.
An apology was made for her. Honorable Masipa is also not on today, Chair.
Okay. Let us go to Honorable Muntwedi.
Well, a very good morning to you, everybody. Hopefully, Chair, you will not rule me out of order. I just want to pass our condolences on the death of the outgoing Auditor General, a man who has dedicated his life in service of the people of the Republic of South Africa, guarding against the abuse, the continuous abuse of the public funds. Condolences to the family and the colleagues who are part of this meeting from the Office of the AG and the general population of the Republic. Chair, I was actually not I struggled with connection on the presentations of the AG, but I managed to get few very important things that I actually know there in that office. One, Honorable Steyn mentioned the issue of the management report that normally the AG would give to any institutions that they audit, giving them an opportunity to demystify any of the issues that may be in that report that they can clear with the AG before the AG makes his or her final report, in fact, in a particular institution. Now, it is worrying that we are sitting here today with findings that are repeat findings from one financial year to the other. Clearly, there's no will in the department in addressing some of those repeat findings that we find that the Auditor General is speaking about. In terms of the PFMA and the MFMA, I know that some of these findings, if they are continuously reported, they should be flagged as a risk. And all the institutions are supposed to at least have 10 risks that they've identified in an institution. I am not sure if some of these repeat findings not following the SCM processes has the department actually flagged as some of the risk, and also having provided what mitigating do they have. I want to ask the Office of the Auditor General, what is it that they can do from their office in making sure that there is compliance with the laws that must be followed, especially with regard to the PFMA chair. On the other report that I was actually managed to listen into is the special report by Michelle on the COVID-19 chair. Quickly, there's an issue that Michelle raised as part of the recommendations as she was concluding that the department were advised to review the prices that suppliers were charging farmers. We would really appreciate that, Chair, because some farmers in paper are said to have received 50,000 or whatever amount approved to them, whereas in reality, they only received goods to the value of almost 50%, half of what was approved. Because you find some suppliers charging handling fees of 25%, they charge VAT, also they charge tax. Some of them are not even suppliers of those things. So when I'm a middleman, the department said they are not appointing middlemen. They want people that are directly involved in the business. But I want to find out from the department, how many of the appointed suppliers are people that are actually manufacturers, are not middlemen? Because I can tell you, almost 80, if not more than 80% of the approved suppliers were middlemen, and our people were ripped off. On paper, you are saying a person has received 50,000 when in fact he only received items of 25,000 because middlemen had to also make his or her commission. Now, the other thing, Chair, is how has this thing of COVID-19 applications assisted the department in terms of updating the farmer register? And then the other one, Chair, is that Michelle said there are 861 farmers that did not meet the minimum criteria. Why were those people given vouchers if they did not meet the minimum criteria as set out by government? And she went on further to say there are some farmers who met the criteria and they were not assisted. Can department quickly look into that thing and make sure that the deserving farmers, not these people that are created as farmers, not being farmers, can they make sure that the deserving farmers receive those applications? The last one, Chair, is I want to check the department on the issue of this assistance. The assistance was meant for assist farmers for winter crop planting. When they're doing their audit, Auditor General, you should know that these things did not assist farmers for winter crop planting because they were the vouchers were only given out to farmers when the winter crop season has closed, planting season has closed. Now you ask yourself, which season was this thing assisting farmers to? The last thing, Chair, is on the duplicate vouchers. I had an experience where one farmer approached me saying that he has received a duplicate voucher. And I advised him, an old man in Taung, I said, take that thing back because government should be able to pick up if there are any duplicates. Now, in your report, I have not seen, or maybe I might have missed, where you have made mention of duplicate vouchers that were distributed to farmers and farmers having redeemed them. Is there such a situation? And how many were identified and what systems are going to be put in place in making sure that money is recovered to those that have received duplicate? And also, who printed duplicate? Because there should have been a system in place that tells that this farmer has received his or her voucher. Thank you very much, Chair. Gompieno ntutlile thata, mphile nako. Ga wa ntsena moganong, ke lebogetse nako ga wa modula stile. O ntha gore, your time is up, Honorable Montre. Ke lebogile.
No, Honorable Montre, you are most welcome. But let me, Honorable Members, remind you that the department has not posed the presentations. Our questions should be directed and posed directly to the Auditor General. Honorable Kapa.
Chair, I've been disabled here by the technology.
Yes.
So I don't have anything to say at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Please also check you are logged in two devices. Your name comes up twice. So just check what is happening there.
Okay, I'll try and disable one. Thank you, Chair.
All right.
You must investigate it. You are double dipping, Chief.
Honorable members, is there any other honorable member that I might have missed out on? If not, let me also make a contribution on the questions posed by the AG, a presentation put to us by the AG. I think one of the risks identified by the Auditor General has been excessive prices charged by the suppliers. And I'd like to understand perhaps from the department when it does grapple with this presentation put by the Auditor General, to explain if this risk was ever prevalent in the past, and if so, what has been done or will be done to ensure that suppliers do not overprice their goods and services. In responding to these findings from the AG, perhaps honorable members, the bigger question to be asked and on my side has been centered in and around the factors leading to wasteful and irregular findings. And I would like the AG to explain more in detail what actually led to these factors leading to wasteful and irregular findings, and what were their recommendations to the department? How has the department responded to previous recommendations, particularly when you are looking at the issues that have been put to us by various honorable members in terms of the summer, the farmer support given. We are beginning to have a sense, honorable members, that a number of farmers who were beneficiaries of this COVID support funding have not fully been able to benefit or receive the monies allocated to them. And therefore, would want to understand from the AG's point of view, in order to assist the committee, how do we actually ensure that what has been disclosed to being 50,000 paid to a farmer in the Northern Cape, we are able to find and track every rand of that. I think in trying to ready ourselves and prepare for oversight, we would like to understand, if we are to choose a province like the Free State and then call hearings from the farmers that benefited, in seeing their names on record and seeing the amount claimed to have been paid to them, and being able to receive testimonies that confirm if that is the case as put to us by the department. But also, let me ascertain in terms of the department and the ARC in particular have been presenting audit improvement plans to the portfolio committee every quarter, and have been given the committee assurance about addressing these issues. Yet the audit outcomes continue to regress. What does the Auditor General see as an underlying challenge, and who is responsible for ensuring that the AG's recommendations are followed through? Also, in the Auditor General's opinion, is the department and its entities' internal audit functions as effective as they should be? In addition, to these units or structures receive the necessary support from the department or entities management? In light of these audit risks identified by the Auditor General, what systems can the Auditor General recommend, if there are any systems model, to the department for consideration? I think perhaps the last one, the inadequate supplier selection of beneficiaries is very worrisome, given the fact that many small-scale farmers and emerging black farmers did not qualify for relief program from the department. In responding to these findings from the AG, how is the department going to ensure that in future, small scale and emerging black farmers are properly screened for departmental programs without risk of excluding those who do qualify? I will end there for now. Let us hand back to the AG for responses on the questions of clarity posed by the honorable members.
Thank Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. Let me appreciate the comments and the questions posed by the members. And acknowledge those that the department will also be responding to later on. Maybe let me start with the question around how does the AGSA help? Interlinked with a question that says, are you helpless as an office? And Chair, I just want to go back to our reputational promise, which is linked to the mandate. Key to our role is the independence of the office. So key to that, Chair, is that from the constitution perspective, we are requested not to be a player and a referee at the same time, which would mean that we are very much dependent on other role players to take our messages, implement them, and ensure that we all see the results that we would like to see. And that's why key to our reputation, Chair, we indicate that we are enabling oversight. And I think that's why it's critical for us to come upon this committee to indicate what our observations are and hand over to the committee to assist us in ensuring that there's consequences on the matters that we're putting on. It is key for any audit office to ensure that they don't find themselves playing the management role. And I think I just wanted to assist there so that our responsibility and role is clear. However, you would be privy, Chair, that with effective from the 1st of April 2019, the Public Audit Act would have been enhanced, amended to include the concept of material irregularity, that as the office, as much as we will not be performing any management role whatsoever, we are now empowered to take some of the matters forward up until the element of consequence, at least to a certain extent, can play itself out. How are we implementing that as an office? We had opted for a phase-in approach, Chair, which would mean that we are taking all the entities in stages. We have not yet put your portfolio on board. So we first targeted some of the big players around the regular expenditure. We targeted some of the municipalities. We've rolled it in from the 2018-19 financial year. We open up our scale to accommodate more audits for 19-20. And we are hoping that eventually your portfolio will also be on board. And they will be able, at least to the extent of the material irregularity, take it forward where the fiscus would have been lost. And some of the people need to pay it back. And that is the role. But once more, Chair, we will still be doing that, wearing our cap as auditors and not as management in-house. Our dependency on other role players will always be there. And that's how the law is structured and how the auditing standards are. There was a question from Honorable Slate that talks about what OBP have done in terms of paying before they receive, whether it's legal, illegal, and what would have happened. It is a good accounting practice to pay the goods once you receive them because you are able to match the quality of what's sitting on the table to what you ordered to your goods received note. However, if you have an arrangement that allow you to pay in advance, you ought to ensure that at the point of receiving, you literally match what you ordered versus what you are receiving. If you do not do that, then it becomes an, I will still call it illegal payment from PFMA perspective, because PFMA is quite clear that you shall not incur fruitless and wasteful, which means that any payment in vain, it is prohibited from the PFMA perspective. There was a question in terms of, I think, interlinked as well with our role. All these repeat non-compliances. I should highlight that even in our independence, Chair, we are doing what we call interim audits, which would mean that even prior to us expressing an opinion that we bring to the committee, there is work that we perform in the intermediate. We also do what we call the status of the records review. We share with management, we share with the audit committees, we also share with the board, where we are saying these are the areas that according to us, they are indicating red flags. Should you not attend to them, they're likely going to trip you as an auditee later on. Once more, the interdependency on other role players taking that message and implementing it. We do engage up until the Honorable Minister, just making sure that there's an appreciation of what we found not to be working in an environment. The other question that mainly came from Honorable Stray in terms, I think it was more a comment around the management report. Yes, there are management reports. Each and every one of the entity within your portfolio will be sitting with a management report that is more detailed on the nitty-gritty of the findings. It is not a public document. It is not what we required to send through. However, Chair, you would also know that through you, any other documents and information that you require from the AGSA, if you put it in writing, we are obligated to support you in that regard. So that one, I'll leave it to you, Chair, to then make a decision around it. But we will be obligated to support you on all areas that you require our support. I noted the comments around the COVID-19 in particular. I also acknowledge the comment that was made that the department had appeared and they had indicated that they are working on our report. We appreciate that. There was a question from Honorable Strain again that said, did we do any work on the PPE? Yes, we did, the PPE of the department. But obviously, in terms of the quantum and the money attached to it, it would not have been as massive as it would have been for other portfolios. But we've done the work for the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development in terms of the PPE that they had procured for themselves. The budget attached to it was around 20 million to it, and we indicated the supply chain requirements that were not followed. And I do know that the department indicated that they instituted an investigation and they were implementing consequences in that. There was a question around, I just want to go back to the, maybe a comment from Honorable Matlaso, just want to make sure I pronounce it right. I think it had to do with the pharmacy. It was more commenting and acknowledging some of the things that we put on the table. And I also noted the question that you were posing to the department around how many of the suppliers were the middlemen and not necessarily the manufacturers. Chair, I think the issue around suppliers, just to highlight it and maybe open it up a bit, we specifically said as much as the department would have taken as many suppliers as possible, we were cognizant that eventually if we don't standardize the pricing and put thresholds around, it makes the farmers who are in more vulnerable areas to be taken advantage of, because if the supplier close to me is probably giving or rather selling some of this of this inputs or the commodities at a sky high prices, as much as one can argue there's another supplier that you could go to that may be a bit cheaper, chances are in my area that can be the only person I deal with. We were therefore urging the department to support that process better to make sure that even in the most rural of the places, nobody gets taken advantage of. And I think that the department had indicated that they are working on that process and they are taking our recommendation forward. I want to interlink that with the question that you posed, Chair, around how can the committee assist in this regard when you do go on the ground to meet some of these farmers. It would be important, yes, one, as you indicated, to take a conversation with the farmers, understand what their burning points are. But of crucial is also to visit some of these farms that they also indicating as the areas where they are, the farming activities are taking place. And I'm saying that because as the Auditor General, as part of report number two, we are particularly visiting some of these farmers to just try and get a sense of the relationship between what is sitting on paper and what we are sitting on the ground. And already we can see that some of these things are not necessarily playing themselves out as they are written on paper. And sometimes it is from the side of the department playing oversight, but at times it's also from the very same farmers as well that also sometimes take advantage of the system. So as you do visit them, it will be important that some of the observations that you are making, we would also like to get as the Office of the Auditor General, so that we see if there's a synergy between what we are picking up as we visit them and what the department would have reported as well. There was a question around what primarily leads to fruitless and wasteful and irregular. And Chair, I just want to summarize it without going into the nitty-gritty and just say it is a disregard of the, it's as simple as that. Really, we can go into the nitty-gritty of who did not do what.
But primarily, if you look at the PFMA, it is crafted in a manner that says you should not, which would mean that our etiquette around the prescript, it has to be enhanced, meaning all the officials that are trusted with the supply chain processes and those who are trusted with overseeing, they have to respect the prescripts. And what we are finding is that at times we deviate, and as much as the law allows for deviation, it is very particular in what instances you can deviate. You deviate if it's emergency. You deviate if it's impractical to follow the lengthy supply chain processes, or you deviate if that is the only service provider that you can deal with. But we are finding is that we are not necessarily respecting the prescriptions in the manner that we ought to. And I think what exaggerated is that the element of consequence management. If I'm an official and I'm privy to the fact that some other person had caused fruitless and wasteful, and really nothing much happened to them, they're still in the system and they're still continuing as an ordinary business, it is likely not to be a deterring factor, and I'll continue Nami in the same breath. Really there, I wanted to just summarize it by saying the etiquette around the prescript, it needs to be strengthened in the portfolio. There was a question, Jay, that you posed around ARC in particular, in terms of what is the underlying cause? And I think with ARC, we just find that the speed in terms of which we respond to the matters that the AGSA put on the table, it is not where we would want it to be. Yes, I think in the current year, you would see that the qualification is around 2-3 matters, which one can say, look, there's a bit of improvement in terms of the number of qualifications that are sitting on the table. But as we're sitting as the office, we believe that ARC have got the capability to move in the space where they can report reliably. However, we should not be waiting for the audit process to play itself out, because if we do the correction during the audit process, ordinarily you're not going to be able to attend to all the matters. So there, the speed in terms of which we attend to the matters consistently during the year, even when auditors are not there, it would benefit the ARC in particular. The matter of internal audit, I'm going to marry it to the audit committee chair that you posed from our side. Our observation within the portfolio, we very much appreciative of this function. And I guess in their nature, it's almost similar to what we do. The only difference is that they're much more closer than ourselves. Internal audit and audit committee, by law as well, they have to be independent. They would still have some sort of an interdependency for management to act. But we found these functions to be effective in your portfolio. We found that some of the matters that we are raising, they're already sitting in some of the audit committee reports or recommendations. Some of them we found them in the internal audit report. And once more, it just talks to how speedily do we respond to some of these matters as the auditee, just to make sure that we benefit from some of these recommendations before they become a qualification or whatever the case may be in the year-end reporting. So in totality, Jay, the message that we are leaving with the committee is that we just need to press a bit harder. We are comfortable that with the direction that you're taking as the portfolio committee, we're likely to succeed, but we will need a much more speedy response from the auditee perspective, just to make sure that where we require help, we also highlight those matters a bit earlier than during the audit process. Lastly, Jay, there was a comment from Honorable Matato around duplicate vouchers. I think for us, and when Michelle was presenting, we highlighted that just premier fact that you give a voucher, and as a farmer, I can go to another service provider and present the very same voucher, and nobody can pick it up in the system. It is problematic in its nature, because you find that your processes do not allow you to pick up an instance where there's likely to be a double benefit for one particular farmer. Here, without taking much time, may I pause here and really acknowledge the comments that the members have made. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the responses. Any other further input from the other presenters in the AG?
No, thank you. We're fine, Chair.
You covered.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, Due to time, we've got two other presentations. I would request that we move on with the presentation of the ARC and OBP. Yes? Honorable Montwedi, is that you?
Yes. Sorry, Chair. My network is seriously acting up. Can I continue, Chair? I just have two follow-ups.
I was saying, Dr. Montwedi, we still have two other presentations from ARC and OBP. Can I plead with honorable members that we move on? And we can then send other questions to the AG in writing.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But the office of the AG must record my. It's fine, Chair. But the person who was speaking now must record my name correctly. It's not Makaso, if maybe she was responding to me.
We'll apologize on the behalf of the AG, Honorable Montwedi. Sometimes with these virtual meetings and this technology we use, it becomes difficult to grapple with people's names. Even on the system itself, you are not able to pick up the names correctly. So let us apologize on behalf. It is Honorable Montwedi. Honorable members, I will then at this juncture request that we move to the two presentations from the ARC and the OBP, and also request that due to time, they should not dwell much on the issues around the mission and vision. They should deal directly with the issues that the Auditor General has raised. And please be mindful of time, that we will give each presentation 20 minutes so that we may have at the end of it 20 minutes for honorable members to pose questions and then 20 minutes for responses. That should be sufficient time for the last hour and a half that we have. ARC, you may proceed.
Good morning, honorable members. Could I please get a confirmation that the presentation is showing? My name
is. It is uploaded. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. Honorable members, if you may allow me through your chair, if we could introduce the new chair of the board of the ARC to say a few comments first before I proceed.
Proceed.
Okay. If I may introduce our new chair, Ms. Joyene Isaacs, and allow her to make a few comments, opening remarks, and then we can start. Ms. Isaacs.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, everybody. I have to say that listening to the AG, the ARC has a lot of work to do. However, we started on the 1st of July, which was an unusual way of taking over the council because it was halfway through the year for a new annual report, annual performance plan, as well as finalizing the annual report. I think what we have learned is that, especially in terms of the audit process, we need to focus on it, and that the challenges of capacity, funding, the agricultural context remain. And I want to give my commitment that the 12 members of council is serious to address the audit outcomes and look at how we can, together with the ARC management, deal with the improvements required. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, as directed by the Chair, I will be brief from my side, focus primarily on a few comments. I think on behalf of management, let me start by indicating that during the course of the year, we put a lot of effort in trying to achieve the intended outcomes of the organization in accordance with its mandate, as well as in accordance with the annual performance plan. And as such, I will not dwell too much on the strategic goals 1 to 5, which are understood and known by the members, since we had engaged with the portfolio committee at a point at which we were presenting the annual performance plan. Suffice to say, honorable members, in terms of performance information, the ARC received an unqualified audit with no findings in that particular regard. And the organization has delivered in accordance with its objectives in terms of pre-determined indicators and targets during the course of the year. We have provided you with a copy of the presentation, which is quite fairly extensive and gives you examples of the kinds of work that the ARC has been able to deliver during the course of the year. As the Chair has indicated, we've also, during the course of the year, been working towards trying to clean up all the audit items that came from the previous year that were identified by the Auditor General, including installing new systems and new procedures and reviewing our policies. I must say, Chair, for the year that ended, and in terms of the previous specific audit findings from the Auditor General, we managed to resolve all the items as at the end of the financial year. Allow me, Chair, at this particular point to now focus, as you requested, on the key issues that the Auditor General has flagged, and accordingly, therefore, allow me, Chair, to invite the CFO of the Department of the Agriculture Research Council to make the presentation in respect of the the finance, and then also respond to the key issues around the audited annual financial statements and the response to the AG. Ms. Manyama, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you very much, and good morning to all the honourable members. If you go to the next slide, CEO. In terms of the financial, the financial results, I'm just highlighting the key highlights from the financials, and then we'll talk about the audit outcome and the way forward. On the income statement side, we received the grant in line with the allocation letter. And in terms of our external income, it had a slight reduction of 1.5%. If you compare year on year, then the total expenditure of the organization was 1.28 billion, which resulted in 1.6% saving. And then for the overall reporting, we reported a surplus of 122 million. And we had some below the line adjustments on gain on biological assets, which was a new item for the organization. I'll talk about that on the next slide. And then the next slide, in terms of the financial position, the net assets of the organization is sitting at 1.6 billion, which is 38% year-on-year growth. And we realized the growth in current assets, mainly coming from the cash that has increased year-on-year. And also on the receivables that we had some reduction as well. And then income received in advance, we also had some improvements in that regard. If we go to the next slide, we can skip the slides for revenue, but we'll take questions on that. The next slide. We can also skip the slides for total expenditure. Then the next slide. This committee can recall last year as part of our AIP, Audit Improvement Plan, we had an initiative to do the revaluation of the orchards and the vineyards within the ARC. I can confirm that this was done during March 2020, and it has led to the gain on biological assets for the current year of 9.2 million, but we had to retrospectively adjust the financials so that it can reflect the opening balance. Then also just to confirm to the committee that we have since sought approval from the National Treasury to retain the rollover of the surplus funds, which is 63.5 million. And I can confirm that the approval has been received by the ARC. Then if we move to the next slide, we also embarked on the land valuation during the current financial period. We did the revaluation of the better plants, which is the orchards and the vineyards. And also we had some capex spend. So the slide mainly just highlight what are the areas that had not changed during the audit and what has changed. But in terms of the new items for the organization, it was the better plants, and it was the buffaloes that we accounted for. We also had horses and all that. But I'll take questions later on that. Then we can skip this slide, but just to highlight on the slide, the unspent conditional grant is the monies that are relating to the FMD. And at year end, it was sitting around 227 million, as indicated on the slide. The next slide. We had an issue with the commitment disclosure. And just to highlight that some of the issues were emanating from the system challenges, but equally there were some human elements in terms of the open orders that were not cancelled on time. We resolved the part of the open orders during the audit process. However, due to time constraints, the other adjustments couldn't be allowed due to the time constraints, but it is something that we are working on as part of our audit improvement plan. Then the next slide, in terms of the cash flow, just to indicate that the organization continues to deliver positive net cash flows from operating activities. And in terms of our closing cash, it was a huge improvement if you compare the year on year. The next slide. The audit outcome, as mentioned, it was qualified. We can go to the next slide. The areas that have been highlighted is the prior year land valuation, which I can indicate that this is a new matter, and then commitments also is a new matter. And then the rendering of services is a different matter as compared to what has been raised previously. And in terms of the compliance with legislation, it was relating to the adjustments that we made during the audit process, is the issue of the irregular expenditure and also consequence management. Then on the audit findings that have been raised, I can confirm for the 2020 to 2023 audit findings, and I've just shown the three-year trend in terms of the audit findings that have been raised during the past 3 years. And I can confirm that all the initiatives that we had in the FY 2019-20 audit improvement plan have been implemented and were confirmed as such by internal audit and also by the Auditor General as well. Then in terms of the way forward, we have prepared the audit improvement plan, which is currently going through our internal governance processes. We'll be focusing on implementing the areas of improvements that are arising from the 360-degree assessment and as well as the culture survey. But we will also be strengthening the controls to minimize the recurrence of the root causes which led to the audit findings. We will also be reviewing the skills as well and providing the necessary training. In this regard, we will be providing basic refresher training for all the SCM and finance employees. Then, similar to last year, we'll be preparing the interim financial statements, and we'll ensure that during the interim audit, the focus is on the qualification areas so that that can be reviewed and then we get a view from the AG. Then the next initiative is more on consequence management. We will be finalizing all the disciplinary cases that are relating to prior years, irregular expenditure and also fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And the deadline that we have is for December this year. And by January, through our council, we'll be submitting the request for condonation for irregular expenditure to the National Treasury. And again, the issue of strengthening our monthly controls and sign-off by responsible managers will review our policies and strengthen our processes where necessary, and also providing the necessary delegations of authority to minimize any bottlenecks within the system. And we will be revaluing our buildings and also properties. This is for as part of the ARC turnaround plan, but equally for accounting or finance purposes, we'll need the revalued amounts for the buildings going forward. And we will be looking at our systems. I think this is the end of our presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I think the important points have been highlighted by the CFO in respect of the key interventions that we have been seized with during the course of the year. I must emphasize, Chair and honorable members, that this aspect of consequence management has been rather difficult for us in a number of ways, in that in as much as there might be an audit finding from the Auditor General, we are required in terms of labor relations to actually investigate the matter, bring the evidence properly through a proper disciplinary hearing and a proper disciplinary hearing process. This is what has actually delayed us in a number of instances, because in a number of instances, we found ourselves in situations where there had been contentions between the relevant employees and their representatives, and in this case, in many instances, their representatives tend to be organized labor, which actually, in some instances, ended up at CCMA, which further postponed the cases quite a number of times, and that actually hampered our ability to conclude a number of these particular cases. However, we have streamlined quite a lot of them and are getting close to finishing them, hopefully, by December. Thank you, Chair. The floor is yours. We are ready for questions. I have the team of other board members online as well participating here, as well as other members of the executive management team. Thank you, Chair and honorable members. We are ready for questions and comments.
Thank you to the ARC for your presentation. And I will invite honorable members to pose questions once we have disposed also of the OBP presentation. I would therefore invite the OBP to upload their presentation and also take us through their presentation. Do note that you have 20 minutes to engage with the committee on your presentation. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chair and Honorable Portfolio Committee member and colleagues. It's a pleasure to do the presentation on behalf of OBP. We have our new chairperson who would be starting because we have a new board that was appointed by the minister, I think 2 weeks ago. And I'll be doing the presentation together with our CFO, who also is with us here. So with your permission, I'll ask the chairperson to start, and we'll move with the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Renee Kinosi. I have been appointed to the OBP Board as the chairperson from 1 November 2020. And I'd just like to say we look forward to working with the Portfolio Committee. We understand that there's lots of work to be done at the OBP, but we a seven-member board, including one representative from the Minister's Office. So I'd just like to say that we look forward to the future interaction and to ensure that the Portfolio Committee receives all its requests on time. And we have confidence in what management presents today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Member, as it was requested that we stick within the 20 minutes provided to us, we'll try to go fairly quickly. In the executive summary, you can see what our position was for the financial year that is in review. We managed to achieve 46% of our planned targets. And in terms of the sales, we achieved 177 million out of the target of 234 million. Obviously, COVID did play a negative role in our revenue as we lost some important sales, export sales in the last month of the year. In terms of our audit finding, we heard it from the AG. We got an unqualified audit opinion and a reduction in irregular expenditures from 42 million to 1.9. And the processes in terms of condonation are underway. And in terms of also our performance information, we got an unqualified opinion. And the company passes the as a going concern evaluation. Although we made a loss, but I think our CFO will give the context in terms of our financials. I'll go fairly quickly through the other side. I think we know what OBP has been working on. We did develop our new strategy, which we're working in since last year, which is summarized on the slide that is presented. We're still very compliant with our equity distribution, although we have new members in terms of the executive that have improved our outlook in terms of our equity presentation. So I'll go through the slides fairly quickly. This is our new executive team, which includes two ladies who have joined us in the current financial year. In terms of our performance, as I stated earlier, we missed some of the important export sales due to the lockdown, which put us in a position where we didn't meet our targets. Our production facility process has been ongoing. We've presented it over the past few years. The work is still ongoing. There's been a review of the plans to be more compliant and bring in a phasing approach to the process, and we're still on track. In terms of our production efficiency, there's been a huge increase. And I think the committee will recall that we usually put an index instead of giving detail in terms of our efficiency, since this is a public presentation and we have competitors that may get some details that are sensitive for our business. But important to say is that we have improved quite extensively and sensibly in terms of our efficiency since last year. The customer satisfaction also is in the positive, especially having improved in terms of our product. We also are working on improving our product portfolio with more products having been developed and launched, ready to be put into the market in the past financial year. I did state that we did achieve a unqualified audit outcome. We did conduct an employee satisfaction. We didn't conduct employee satisfaction, but we did conduct a climate survey, which gave us also an improving situation in the organization. We've managed to maintain our ISO accreditation, and we achieved also in terms of the training limited 83%, which is below last what we had planned. We have increased in terms of distribution. We've managed to bring in two more distributors targeting essentially rural area, and we're quite proud of the program we're doing in the activity we're doing in terms of access to rural communities. If there are questions later on, my colleague who's in charge of sales and marketing will happily give more details. So I'll pass to the CFO to give us the financials. Yeah.
Thank you, CE. Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. We'll take us through the financial highlights, so I keep within time. Our assets increased by 34%. The largest contributor was the GMP project, that is the Good Manufacturing Practice project, which progressed during the year. This is a key and critical project for OBP because this project will allow us to compete in the international arena as one of the best. And it is one of our key focus areas for this year as well. Unfortunately, COVID has slowed our progress on this, but we will continually work towards this. Regarding our liabilities, we do not have any debt. And I think that's one key thing that we want to continue, as we do not receive grant funding for our operations. Our revenue, although it did not meet the target, we increased our revenue by 6%. So the company managed to maintain an above inflation increase in the period. And our cash flow management was key. We did have a positive cash flow of 286 million. It was a decrease from last year because we are focusing on increasing our asset base, and obviously the return on the asset base, we've projected that it will come in a certain number of years around the GMP project. Just to move on to the next slide, it is the detailed income statement. There might be questions around the loss, and I think we'll link this then to the highlights that the AG gave, and executive management did have an extensive exercise during the year where they picked up some activities that contributed to adjustments in the financials around inventory management. And this will be a once-off adjustment in this year. And we're looking to return to a positive. We've looked at our current management accounts to a positive and a surplus in the current year. So in the current financial year, you do see a loss of 5 million. If we had to adjust by depreciation, which is a non-cash item of 12 million, we're still operating at a profit. Just to move on to the next slide, which is the assets. I've spoken just to the key areas, which is actually our assets and our liabilities. Then the last slide would be the cash flow slide, where we have shown that we have reduced our cash flow our cash holdings significantly from the prior year. But we have invested about 94 million into this project. And unfortunately, we haven't been able to progress much in this project to then see the returns in this year. But we will see the returns in the coming year after we've invested more time, obviously, and the gap between the COVID and the recovery period that we're looking at. Thank you, CE. Thank you, Honorable Members.
Thank you. Then in terms of the key strategic risk, I won't go in detail. They nicely presented there. We definitely have identified, including those that were identified by the Auditor General the previous year, they've been part of what we've been working toward in the current year. There's been a number of achievements, as I did mention, our customer satisfaction due to the fact that we've improved our product availability, which was always a concern. I think we're moving in the right direction, as summarized in that slide. And very, very important for OBP is we have to be good compliant with good manufacturing practice for us to access local but mainly international market, because OBP, to be profitable, need exports. And for the first time, we have a clear roadmap that will lead us to GMP with activity that have been already being implemented since last year. We're progressing in that direction. And then the last slide is just to summarize some of the activities, specific activities that are taking place for us to improve on the different area where the organization is operating. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair, for the time and the opportunity.
Honorable members, there you have it. Both the presentations of the ARC and OBP have been put to you. I will now invite the honorable members for questions of clarity and comments you may have on the two presentations, taking to account the issues raised by the Auditor General on both ARC and OPP. Honorable Klappe.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome...
Honorable Klappe, can we take off the presentation of the OBP on offload it? Thank you. Proceed, Honorable Klappe.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation of both the ARC and OBP. Chair, I would try to stick to the issues raised by Auditor General, but on ARC, I just want to check with them on one of their program 7. Because these programs are they have impact at times on this qualifications. My interest on program 7, Chair, is the commercialization program via ARC. It achieved all the three planned targets. Now ARC has indicated that it has got a license agreement with the Mudak University. I just want to check with them, but based on this license, can they indicate the role in respect of this license agreement with the plant health products and this university, including the benefits? What is it that we are benefiting, the sector is benefiting out of this program or license or partnership with them? I also want to check, Chair, the program 9 administration and corporate service program. They only achieved 8 out of 22 planned targets. It has got a huge impact on this. Now, it is very worrisome, Chair, considering the financial and audit challenges that the ARC faces. And this has been picked also by the Auditor General. I just want to check, Jorge, despite all these things, ARC, Honali training of masters and doctoral students, they've been struggling to meet employment equity targets for the past few years. Can they indicate if they have any strategy in place to attract competent candidates from designated groups? So on the AGIS report, the issue here, now that we are with them, can they indicate to the portfolio committee what they intend to do with repeated findings. Because in as much as their audit findings has decreased, I think repeated findings has a huge impact on their audit on the audit opinion. What is it that they're planning to do? The other questions, Chair, that I have on clarity is that there has been, for the past 3 years, a challenge in terms of the viability of the ARC. They also indicating for this financial year, for due to COVID, their external revenue is at risk. And it obviously will affect their programs. I just want clarity. How does the ARC plans to increase its external income? And then they also working with academia in publications and journals and all this stuff, especially on issues of research. Is there a proportion that they can indicate to us of its scientists that are attached to academic institutions? And if there are any, are they able to generate revenue through the work of the scientists in the academic institutions? The last point, Chair, is that in 2016, ARC developed a Vision 2050 strategy to turn around the NTT and effectively address some of its challenges. And so the challenges in the agricultural sector, because it's still grappling some of the with these challenges, can it indicate to us the status of the strategy? Is it functional, is it operational, or is still being developed, the strategy? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Thapa. Honorable Thapa.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have my much questions to be clarified, but only if I can be clarified on a strategy to eliminate repeated findings, repeated audit findings, because if they keep on being repeated, to me that's a concern, and it means to me that there should be a way of doing away with them, because it means that by the time you go to the next audit, you know what was your mistake or what was to be corrected. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kappa. Honorable Mama Stein.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenters. And Chairperson, I just have a question to the ARC that is linked to the re-evaluation of the sale of the buildings and property, Chair. I think it is something that I've been asking about for the last few years. The ARC is sitting on massive, massive property and buildings, and I want to confirm with them that it is something that they are looking at, to look at the financial stability of the ARC. I think it is very important that we do look at that, Chairperson. Then, Chair, I want to confirm with the ARC, it's my information that you assisted with the drawing up of the list of those farmers under the PLAS contracts that would get COVID assistance, not the ones that got the vouchers, but the bigger amounts that received COVID assistance. Is that confirmed, and can we be given those reports by the department that why certain farmers were picked to receive that funds and why not? Then, Chairperson, it's all that I wanted to ask now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stein. Honorable Montwedi.
Can le boga modula stilo. Ke a humana, Chairperson, ke a humana. My network is really failing me. I will not be able to engage that much for the presentation because I'm in and out. I'm checking in, checking out. I don't know what is happening here. But let me first congratulate the new board, both on the ARC and the OBP, on the appointment hope they will ensure that the provision of services actually is done and our people receive services that they deserve. Just two things on the OB, on the ARC chair. They've mentioned that there's a 1.6% of savings that they have made. I want to check with them that when they started making a presentation, they spoke of aligned priorities to the NDP that we do not subscribe to as an organization, by the way. I want to know, these savings that they make, don't they reinvest them into those aligned priorities? Because there are certain priorities that I've seen that we really need to see to it that they improve in making sure that there's more work there. There's the former DG, former DG, that the former one, I forgot his name, sorry, yeah. Yes, Bramaik Mlenga used to speak of Kaonafatso ya Dikgomo, which is one of the projects that is actually implemented by the ARC. Don't they see some of these savings to take them into some of those programs, since there's no positive work that they're doing under the program on Kaonafatso ya Dikgomo, Chair? The other thing, Chair, on ARC is on their top five revenue streams. The CFO went quickly through there. I've not actually seen what are those five streams, but I've seen that government tops the list as the number one top stream in terms of revenue to the ARC. Aren't there any other revenue streams that the OBP thinks they can tap into? Since they're dealing with seeds, cultivars, seeds, and fertilizers and that, don't they see that as a revenue stream that they can tap into, because the price of seeds is extremely high, the price of a fertilizer, I once raised this when they were in parliament, don't they think they can tap into that stream, because it is a stream that is only a reserve of the few, but we must make sure that ARC enters that stream. OBP chair, they spoke of having achieved 46% of their planned targets. What maybe they could have responded why they didn't reach some of only 46% of their planned targets. Apologies, because I was checking in and checking out. Why only 46% of their planned targets, and how has this impacted on programs that they should actually be to doing to our people? The other thing, Chair, is the net sale. I think it's also commendable to mention OBP having decreased their expenditure from 2.4 million to 1.9 million. I think it's quite commendable what they did, but we'd appreciate that the next report would want to see that 1.9 million being at zero, say. And they also said they ran at a loss, but they explained, as they were explaining, I got cut again. This thing of checking in and out, we must start a commission on. Lastly, Chair, the lady on the Auditor General, the questions that I did not post, I post them on the group there. She must choose whether she's going to respond to them on the group chat, or I'll provide my email so that she must actually respond to those questions. They are on the chat. Kelebogile thata Ntate Mandela le maloko a committee.
I must welcome Honorable Montwedi. And I will insist questions to be sent to the secretariat, and those that are in the chat group, the secretariat, please note those questions and collect all the questions from the honorable members and send them together as a committee questions to the AG as well as to the entities. Let us proceed, honorable is Honorable Mbabama back? If not, let me call Honorable Mbata. Honorable Mbata.
She has a doctor's appointment, Chair.
She had come back on the system. But I guess she left again after 10 o'clock. Honorable Marlo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Firstly, let me apologize to all members and yourself, Chair, that I've been struggling since this morning with regard to network to connect. But my understanding, and when I was listening, when the Auditor General was presenting, and also when I go through the document, I realized that somewhere, somehow, it's like the proper financial policies framework is not in place in the department, or is not effectively implemented on the issue of wasteful expenditure. If so, we need to understand, why is the department not making sure that they implement the regulations that are there in terms of the unit standard that they use in the department? I normally used to say, Chairperson, that what we normally know is that if the department has the unit standard that they use in the department, they will always follow their policy and procedures to implement. But the willingness of the officials of the department must be there all the time to assist in implementing the policies that are there. I don't think there is any government that is operating without policies and procedures. So now, one will say, the ISO, as always I used to say, the ISO, it says to us, each and everything that we do, we will be able to track who is doing what, where, and how. So why is the officials of the department not willing to implement that? And then we start to have the opinion from the Auditor General when they talk about the willingness to implement the procedures and policies that are there. So I just wanted to know, what is preventing the department, the unit, not the department, the unit and the department, to make sure that those regulations are implemented, the policies and procedures in the department. Thank you.
If we may correct that, not the department, but the entities.
The entities.
Being OBP as well as ARC. Honorable members, is there any other honorable member that I've missed out who wishes to pose a question? If not, I would pose only one question, honorable members, and it is with regards to the AG's report that has spoken on ARC's management, which did not take effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure of almost up to 22.5 million rands during the 2019-2020 fiscal. And this was not investigated, which is the most alarming part. Can the ARC, can the ARC provide reasons and indicate how it plans to address this matter? And then in terms of OPP, honorable members, maybe let me conclude on the ARC. In light of the AG's report, can the ARC explain how they plan to respond to the risk audit findings by the AG? Also, in regards to the ARC, Sela, is geared towards sustainable wine production. This is a very much welcomed, and can ARC explain to this portfolio committee on how the intended reduction on the national grid will contribute to better financial management and prudence? That is all on my side, honorable members. I don't have much on the OBP. We'll now hand over to the ARC, and then to be followed the OBP. ARC?
Chair and honorable members, thank you for your patience and thank you for your effort in reading the annual report and in engaging with the Auditor General on the performance of the ARC. Chair, allow me through you and the committee to also, on behalf of the Agriculture Research Council, pass our condolences to the team at the Auditor General's office. We know the challenges whenever a team loses one of their leaders or even one of their members. I must point out, Chair, that unlike in previous years, and the Auditor General will confirm this, during the course of the current audit, we had an audit steering committee, which comprised of all the managers and senior managers, including the executive management team of the ARC, as well as the team from the AG, that met at least every week to look at all the key issues in terms of understanding each other about exchange of information, presenting the evidence that is required, and making sure that we respond to the request for information or request for data to the Auditor General as quickly as possible, and clarifying what some of that information means. And I must say that interaction actually created a relatively seamless way in which a number of key things could be resolved, and so that the AG could understand some of the information as they requested. And we appreciated that. Okay, in terms of the questions that were raised, I think myself and the team will do our best to respond to them. If we have missed any, we would appreciate being reminded of that. And let me start by then dealing with some of them as we speak. Where possible, I might assign one or two of my colleagues to assist me in responding to that. On the question that has been raised by Honorable Member Tate around the work that the ARC has done with the Murdoch University, which is in Australia, this particular Australian university had sent some scientists to collaborate with the ARC in looking for different types of plants, species that might exist in South Africa that might actually be useful for developing into animal feed or pastures. Through that particular bioprospecting in the wilds, together with the ARC team, they were able to then get some samples and take back to Australia to go into some trials and develop them further. And having developed them further, they were then able to then demonstrate that a particular plant species, Lebekia in this particular instance, had very good qualities as a fodder plant and could grow very well under certain conditions in different parts of Australia, which would then make it ideal for animal feed. We then went through a whole regulatory process ourselves as the ARC together with Murdoch University to get the necessary approvals in terms of benefit sharing arrangements, because now that we have developed it as an animal feed plant species, it's now going to be, the seed will be produced, and once the seed gets sold to farmers, there will be income, and then there will be royalties that will be shared. as at the moment, this particular plant species had only been exchanged and had only now been identified, and we were now finalizing the license agreement, and the seed sales have not yet commenced. We are hoping that the seed sales will commence in a year or two. What is reported in the annual report is the achievement of having come up with this particular plant species that has now been properly developed to being a variety that can be used for plant fodder. That actually helped us to have this partnership with Murdoch University, where we would now share the benefits once the seed sales are released. It will also allow South African farmers to use this as a plant species for fodder in different parts of the countries of South Africa. So we would also in the future be able to sell the seeds from this particular plant variety. Employment equity targets, I must say, this is a negotiated matter with a whole range of stakeholders, both mostly in the ARC, because you simply can't terminate somebody's employment. And we do try as best as we can to achieve those particular targets through attrition in most instances, and as and when people retire. I must say the ARC is well on track in terms of various categories of designated groupings, particularly in respect of recruitment. In the Western Cape, for example, the ARC's complement of colored employees is extremely high, but in other parts of the geographic distribution of the ARC, they are very low. So it's really those are some of those challenges around where do we find some of these individuals in terms of their geographic distribution. The CFO indicated that in terms of the outcome of the audit by the Auditor General, the findings by the Auditor General are not necessarily repeat findings, and the Auditor General also has confirmed that. However, the categories, when you classify the categories, so when you say PPE, it's in that category, but it's not the same items as in the previous years. So I wouldn't necessarily call them repeat findings, but we will deal with how we would respond to how we deal with all those particular audit findings. Financial viability of a public entity, which is a non-profit organization such as the ARC, is a challenge and will remain a challenge, especially when the parliamentary grant gets cut on a regular basis. We are paying particular attention to this. Yes, we did not achieve the full target of our external revenue. We were 27% below target. In other words, we received 73% of our targeted external revenue for the year that just ended. There are a number of factors that come into play. Part of that is around whether some of the customers are willing to procure services from the ARC. And some of these are influenced by the changes also in the agriculture sector, which then impact sometimes on our ability to generate some of the external revenue. Some of the projects or proposals that we had submitted to a whole range of different funders out there, both locally in South Africa, as well as internationally, some of them did not come through, even though we had anticipated that they were going to come through. So those are some of the reasons that some of those have happened. We work, yes, with a whole lot of universities, both in South Africa and internationally, in partnership with them. And that helps us reduce the cost of employees on the one side in terms of running the project, but also all our researchers and senior researchers are also responsible for generating external revenue in terms of research proposals that they submit out there and do participate in this particular regard. I must say they are working very, very hard to assist the organization to become viable and to contribute towards sustainability of the Agricultural Research Council. And this is part and parcel of some of the work that we're doing around our ARC Vision 2050. It is an ongoing project, and it forms part and parcel of our five-year and annual plans. We incorporate some of those elements of the Vision 2050 of the ARC within that in order to try and implement that for the purposes not only of financial viability, but also for the purposes of contributing towards the sustainability of the agricultural sector. I think the CFO in the last two slides provided indication of some of the key the interventions that we are implementing to deal with the audit findings, mainly through a specific audit improvement plan, which is around implementing a variety of things that we are going through. She indicated, for example, that we're looking at implementing improvements that are coming out of recommendations of conducting a 360-degree assessment of all our senior and executive management people. Implementing the recommendation of a culture survey, which we have just completed, strengthening the controls, internal controls in the organization to minimize the recurrence of through the root causes, which might have led to the audit findings. Reviewing the skills, and in this case, the competencies and appropriate placement of individuals, and making sure that there is appropriate training, and looking at implementing on a regular basis or at every 6 months, interim financial statements and conducting an interim audit, particularly to focus on qualification areas. I must say, Chair and honorable members, this is one of the interventions we implemented last year where we did interim financial statements and conducted an interim audit. And that interim audit was done through the Auditor General and identified certain key areas for improvement, which we did. And that is what helped us to resolve the audit findings from the previous audit period. In terms of consequence management, I have talked to this particular area. We have started doing quite a number of things, interventions in this particular area, especially in respect of irregular expenditure, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And part of that also includes some of the training around the procedures and the review of our policies, strengthening our monthly controls, in terms of, as well as sign off by the responsible managers, and reviewing our business processes and strengthening policies where necessary, and review as well of our infrastructure in terms of ARC buildings and properties, which actually would then be properly accounted in our annual financial statements. In terms of our ICT, review and implementation of improved ICT systems, including our procurement of the required software that hopefully will assist us in achieving the intended outcomes. See, the ARC had no role in respect of the department's implementation or identification of the PLAS farmers for COVID assistance. So I shall leave it to that, the department can respond to that particular point. On the aspect of the question around the savings and whether should the ARC not be using that for kind of Homu, I think it's important, Chair, we keep in mind that whatever savings that we achieve and whatever profit that we might end up with at the end of the year, we need to get approval of the Auditor General and of the National Treasury. And as far as we understand it, the National Treasury will only approve it if it is used as once-off items and not as a recurring items. So therefore, we tend to not to bring this into the regular operations, these kinds of monies into the regular operations because they do affect the recurring expenditure. But the suggestion is noted. It is a good idea. We appreciate it. We shall look into that. There are a number of revenue streams that we look into as the ARC. However, we also need to be careful in that we are a public entity that is intended to support the agricultural sector and we're not designed to be a competitor to the private sector in terms of its ability to perform out there. If we're going to compete with farmers, that may actually start to bring challenges as a public entity, because our primary role is to make sure that we provide the necessary solutions for the sector to be sustainable. Yes, we have made efforts in previous years where we have produced in large quantities drought-tolerant seed, and we were able to sell that seed mainly to government departments in the provinces of agriculture for them to be able to deliver on their programs. If we use that as an approach that actually might assist the sector and might actually assist government to achieve that, its objectives. We are aware that some of these inputs in the agriculture sector are quite expensive. The ARC is not necessarily always structured in a manner that it can actually produce some of these inputs in large quantities to be able to sell to the agriculture sector. But these are good initiatives. These are good suggestions. We will look into them. We will see and explore how we could produce some of these particular inputs, or if not, find ways in which we can assist the agriculture sector to lower the cost of these inputs through seeking alternative technologies or alternative solutions towards enabling agriculture sector to be competitive and much more productive. On the question around what are the challenges in terms of policies and compliances, we continuously look at our policies and procedures. We seek to ensure compliance. I will ask the CFO to respond on that particular question that arose, as the chairperson has indicated, around the irregular expenditure of 22 million and that it was not investigated. I must point out the 22 million irregular expenditure was not identified by the It is something that we, as the management of the organization, identified and engaged with National Treasury, because it was about interpretation of the Act versus the interpretation of National Treasury regulations and how the organization needed to implement some of those procurement processes. Having engaged the National Treasury, we then decided to classify that particular set of items as irregular expenditure, and we agreed that we shall then engage further with the audit with National Treasury around how that needs to be removed, condoned going forward. So in the current year, we will be working towards cleaning that up. The CFO perhaps could respond to that particular item, but before then, Chair, let me quickly respond around the cellar that had been renovated and converted to be off the grid, meaning that it is now being utilizing solar energy. The important point there, it is part and parcel of our measures as the organization in terms of financial sustainability and turnaround plan to reduce our input costs or cost saving measures, and that actually has assisted us in being able to run a cellar that's providing research services as well as other services to the wine industry, while at the same time reducing costs of electricity to the ARC. Chair, through you, allow me to give the opportunity to the CFO to respond to those key issues. CFO?
Maybe before the CFO comes in, let me just slip another question that you may massage while the CFO gives her responses. the department has made available about approximately 700,000 hectares of state land for access by previously disadvantaged farmers or potential farmers that will include women, youth, and vulnerable groups. One of the criteria for the program's beneficiaries is training of the beneficiaries. And in this light, I'd like to understand what role does the ARC plan to play in the program to ensure that the beneficiaries of these farms become successful commercial farmers. You may proceed, CFO.
CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, CEO. In terms of the, I'll start with the issue of the revaluation of land. In terms of the issue here, we appointed a service provider to assist us. However, in terms of the report that they gave us a consolidated report for the land that were sort of readjusted relating to the report for 2013. So we have now embarked on a process to engage the, we've engaged the same service provider to give us a report per property as it was expected by the ATSA. And we believe that this will be resolved when we submit our interim financial statements. Then there was a question about the issue of processes. I must confirm that policies and procedures are in place, but we continue to review to see how best can we provide further guidance, because our finance function is actually decentralized. So there's a lot that the finance teams at the institute do that affects the overall financial statements of the organization. With regards to the issue of rendering of services, we have embarked on the AIP as I indicated, and what we sought to do last year, we actually did. It was just unfortunate that out of the institute that we have, there was one who did not implement, let's say, the guidelines that were provided to the TE, and that's what resulted in that qualification, because the, when the AG re-audited, they were happy with other institute except one. But what we are currently doing, Chairperson, is that the team is actually meeting on a weekly basis to make sure that we continuously monitor the progress in terms of the finance work. But another thing that we've introduced was that there should be monthly sign-offs in terms of the numbers that are coming from the institute. What is our strategy in dealing with the audit findings? I think the CEO has touched the major part of it. The other thing that we have wanted to do is just to provide training, because there are certain errors that are done, let's say, within the finance team that are avoidable, or that one doesn't expect, let's say, a qualified CA or someone with a BCom to be making such errors. So hence, we have sought to do the refresher training for both supply chain management and as well as the finance team. I just want to confirm that we are in the process of going out in a tender. Yes, we will be revaluing all the buildings of the ARC, the properties that have been identified, let's say, as underutilized or unutilized. But equally, we'll also be getting the market-related rentals just to assess if we are charging the market-related rentals. So we believe that that will be implemented before the end of the financial period, but the procurement process has been initiated. Then in terms of our top five revenue streams, yes, the major revenue stream is the parliamentary grant that is coming from government. And then it's followed by what we call external income from the rendering of services. This is core research that the ARC does based on the agreements that it has with different funders. And appearing on that list, we also have royalties. There are royalty agreements that the organization has signed for its cultivars and all that. We are currently also will be reviewing to make sure that we get the best value out of those agreements. Then the issue of the 21 million, just to confirm that indeed it was disclosed by management. It was a misinterpretation of one of the National Treasury instructions, and the meeting with the National Treasury was only, we were able to secure a meeting in April. So it was disclosed in the financial statements. The investigations have been, I think, initiated. Yes, it has been initiated. Internal audit is busy investigating that. So we believe that this will be finalized within a month, and we will be able to deal with the related consequence management arising from that investigation. Basically, the matter is that when we do a single source selection as the organization, a single source selection, we need to seek the concurrence of National Treasury before we can approve such request. So in this case, the ARC from 2016 to date, up to the end of the financial period, there were certain single source selection that were done internally approved without seeking that concurrence from the National Treasury. But we have since clarified, and we are all aligned with the National Treasury. And for the current financial period, I can confirm that we don't sign any approval until the necessary concurrence has been obtained from the National Treasury. But in terms of reporting this in line with the deviations in line with the regulations, the organization has been consistently reporting all this to the National Treasury and also to the ATSA. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, CFO. I think, Chair, in terms of the question that you had just posed in respect of the announcement by the Minister of the 700,000 hectares that is being made available for land reform. First of all, the ARC supports this particular initiative by the Minister and the Department. What is key or essential for this to be successful and sustainable is the need for comprehensive post-settlement support, as well as a much more focused agriculture development program that is coordinated properly. This is going to be key for land reform to succeed under any environment, because in the absence of a proper agriculture development program, we will still be setting up these particular beneficiaries of land reform for failure.
What role is the ARC going to be playing?
I am getting to that. Our role, as agreed with the department, is in a number of areas. First, it's in the areas around identifying the training needs and the skills of these particular farmers, and advising on what kind of training they require, and where possible, providing the necessary training together with the agriculture colleges that are in the provinces. We've agreed with the department in this regard, and we are ready to go. The other part is around providing technical expertise, which is technical assistance, in terms of actually conducting the necessary analysis on the farms. Part of that is around doing things such as soil analysis to be able to identify what can actually grow on a particular farm and which kind of varieties or crops will grow in that particular farm, and then providing the necessary advisories, which is technical scientific advice to the farmers that might be on that particular farm, for them to be able to understand what is required for them to produce on that particular farm. The fourth component is around really the ARC continuously availing its new scientific solutions as and when it develops them, and innovations, and engaging with the farmers about the new knowledge that's coming on stream for them to be able to continue to farm. Those are the roles that we believe we will continue to do, and we will bring on to the land reform beneficiaries for them to be able to be successful. We're not only providing this to the farmers, we're also providing this to extension officers, because we believe they are the frontline support in order to make sure that the program succeeds. I hope that answers your question, Chair.
No, that covers us. Due to time, we will have to move directly to the OBP's responses. And I would like just to throw in a question or two on the input they made, particularly that the OBP reported that it could not meet some of its targets due to lockdown restrictions. And if I heard this correctly, the financial year starts on the 1st of April 2019 to the 31st of March 2020. And the lockdown was announced towards the end of the financial year, if I'm correct, around the 23rd of March 2020, and commenced on the 26th of March 2020. I know this for a fact because I fled Cape Town on the 24th of March to the countryside in Mvezo. The OBP therefore should explain, honorable members, how the lockdown interfered with its business for the fiscal of 2019 and 2020 financial year, bearing in mind that agriculture is an essential service to the Republic of South Africa. Secondly, as COVID-19 pandemic and some restrictions associated with it may be our reality for some time, the OBP should indicate how it plans to conduct business under these circumstances to ensure its financial sustainability. Lastly, honorable members, the OBP operates in a highly technical scientific environment that requires highly skilled and competent personnel. And the high turnover rate of 12% is a serious concern. In this regard, the entity should indicate its current vacancy rate, including the location of most of the vacant positions in its structure, plans to fill the vacancies, and how it retains critical skills, i.e. retention strategy. OBP, you may go ahead. You've got 20 minutes to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for the questions. And let me start by thanking the honorable members that acknowledged our efforts during the last financial year to where we are. We had one question from Honorable Montwadi about the performance, the 46%. Let me say that OBP, we operate essentially also internationally as we export our products. And you'll recall that the COVID impact overseas, especially in some of the market where we operate, started already coming into effect from January of the year. And we started already losing some of the export sales due to the fact that we some of the country where we were exporting were already starting to close travels. So that we could sense already where things were going, and it impacted on us starting to target to relook into our expenditures. And the one of the key contributors to the low performance, which also answer the honorable chairperson partly the question, is the fact that we lost some of the export sales, quite an important contribution. I know that toward March there was a sales of more than 25 million rand that we couldn't export that product. So the impact was already starting to occur, and we were prudent to start cutting like training. We started already revising our training expenditures as we were anticipating things going bad. And then also for the fourth quarter, the performance review were not fully conducted due to the fact that as soon as the lockdown started, we were operating at low rates
especially rotating staff. At the low level, they don't have even access. Some of them don't have access to remote internet access to be reviewed from a distance. So that impacts. So then linking to the last question from the chairperson, we have indeed been impacted by COVID, but our financial for the current year have been not so much impacted because the international market has reopened. We're doing extremely well in terms of our export, but we know that COVID is around for a longer period. We're taking that into account going forward in improving our remote access, for example, for the staff that can operate from home. And we also, in fact, taking advantage of the fact that the livestock is still needed, not only in the country, but internationally, the market is still available. And we're broadening our markets into new areas that are not necessarily affected to the same extent as the main markets, like the African market, where there's still less cases of COVID. But internally in our local sales, the impact is there. We have increased our operation with the government, and we're participating in a number of departmental programs, which is providing also additional income to the organization. To compensate with the loss that we are occurring already, we're seeing in the local market on the COVID, due to COVID lockdown. So I think Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, I think I've covered the answers, the question that were asked to us. Thank you.
You've covered all the questions that have been posed.
Yes, Chair. We had one question from Honourable Mutwedi, and the questions that you ask on the COVID and the impact. Yeah.
We did. And the what about the question from Honourable Kape and Honourable Stain?
No, they didn't ask question to OBP, Chair.
Oh, it was only to ARC?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Honourable members, are your questions covered?
Chair?
Yes, Honourable Kaper.
Because the OBP's here with us, earlier on I spoke to AG about this thing, the wasteful expenditure of inventory ordered and paid for but not received. What's the stance currently on this 7.4 million inventory that was ordered and paid for and not received? Thanks.
Okay, Honorable State.
Okay,
you are covered?
I'm covered. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Montwedi, you covered? Okay, OBP.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable, for the question. First, let me say that the irregularity that was reported in the audit by the AG was detected by management. It wasn't the AG, so we reported it to the AG and the Treasury and the shareholder, and the board, with the board we took a number of consequences. We went on to consequence management by putting on precautionary suspension the officer involved, and an internal audit validation was conducted, which has confirmed the findings, and now we're moving into full investigation with law enforcement agencies. So there are definitely actions that have been taken, and we still working with the AG through that process to finalize investigation and report it.
And my question on the turnover rate as well as the retention strategy has not been covered.
Thank you. So, in terms of the retention and capacity, we had a through a discussion with the board, we embarked on a project of bringing in retirees that used to work at OBP, as OBP's expertise is in general fairly unique. We've been the main vaccine manufacturer in the country, and a lot of that expertise is unique to OBP. And we brought back a number of retirees that were here to train a number of young scientists, and that has been quite a successful program. We also have been able to tap into technologies that are not found in the country, which are internationally available, to put a number of our scientists into those programs. And through HR, we're working at the moment on a succession plan. Strategy, which we will be implementing in a much more effective. We're starting already this year, as we're quite aware of the fact that we have a lot of unique expertise that are required for OBP. So it's a program that is ongoing. But I may use the opportunity to also inform the house that we're having a number of programs where we're trying to build value chain expertise in previously disadvantaged community. We have engaged with the South African Veterinary Association and the Animal Health Technician Organization to start training them into getting into distribution of products, especially in rural areas that have not been covered. Most of the time. So we're doing that program more actively.
What is that?
Sorry?
Vacancy rate is
not too bad. Yeah, our vacancy rate from what I see is 2.7%.
It's not 2%.
2%. It's less than 2%. Because we had a number of positions that were not necessarily needed. In the current situation where we are, we have only 2% of vacancy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, the OBP. I think we will need to look further on that vacancy rate from 2.7 to 2% to under 2%. We're not sure which is which, but we'll park that for further engagements the next time you visit us, if we can get a more precise number on that. Honorable members, let me thank you for today's meeting and having been able to avail yourself for these presentations put to us. I will also want to thank the Auditor General for their presentation, and can see that out of the presentation they put to us and the engagements we've had, there's a lot of work cut out for us, honorable members, into ensuring that we engage fully with the department on its spendings and the spendings of their entities. We look forward to the presentation of the department, and we would be pleased if the AG could be able to avail itself to get further input from the department on the issues that they've raised. I'd like to thank both the entities that have come to present before us today, the ARC, as well as the OPP, for their input and the engagement they've had with us today. Honorable members, it is 12 o'clock and that brings us to the end of our meeting. The meeting stands adjourned. We will meet on Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock for further engagements with the department. I thank you. Have yourself a blessed weekend ahead.